Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about growth potential. And people, you know, we announced the topic early, and people have asked whose growth? And I think the answer is everyone's, including ours as leader and as people. Because when you learn things, when you learn how to go to your full potential, when you learn how to be flexible, it really is in business, which is what we do really, but it carries on into your personal life too, doesn't it? You know how to do stuff. You know how to react. You know how to really get things done, even in your personal life. So it's fabulous. So we're going to ask, yes, we're going to ask our general question. Yes, hello, everyone. What is growth within our context, within the context of what we're going to discuss today, which is alternative dispute resolution, mediation, negotiation process, and like that. So what is growth within that context, which will spill into our real lives? It will. And who needs to grow, which is being asked? We do. Everybody does. Yeah, it's good to learn new things. It's good to think about new ways. It's good to be capable of negotiation, to be capable of reaching consensus, right? Yeah. Yes, and be capable of compromise, too. It's a good point. So what is growth within our context? A lot of people are talking about having new ideas. New ideas. Sometimes they're really new, as in nobody in the entire universe has thought of that before. And sometimes they are just outside our box, right? Yes. Yes, that's a good idea. And sometimes this is a very good point, too, is being made. Sometimes they are ideas to solve a problem that has come up. We see that especially a lot in technology. Things need to be done. Things could be better. Things could be done a different way. And somebody thinks about it and they go, I think we can create a solution, right? Yeah, create a solution. Yes, technology is fabulous and scary at the same time. All good. So outside the box. Yes, so I think that our next growth potential is going to be a reason to leave the comfort zone, right? Yeah. Because if you're thinking outside the box, you are thinking outside your comfort zone and outside the comfort zone of those with whom you are dealing might be more clear because sometimes you don't have the same comfort zone that they do, right? Yeah. I suppose this is true. Lee and others are talking about generational gap. Mostly we see this technology, but maybe even with a difference in very basic ideas, because I do notice that to a certain extent. Basic ideas about, well, I'll tell you what I notice it. There is somewhat of a generation gap, and it is no secret that I am not real young. And there's a new generation, of course, entering the workforce. And the younger people grew up having internet and computers and like that all their lives. They talked to computers as babies. And now people, I have a friend who says that she thinks that her baby, maybe 6 months old, thinks that there's another person in the house named Alexa because they talk to it and it responds. Yeah. And I was thinking, now that's interesting. Wow. So there is kind of a generational gap because they really, some people have different ideas, not about the use of technology so much, because anybody can learn to use it. That's kind of a fallacy. People say, oh, I don't know how to use a computer. Ah, gee willikers, you're in business, go take a class and learn. And yes, people are asking if that's what I did. You know I really did. And this is really a true story. I sold a law practice, because I'm an attorney, you all know that, and I didn't realize how little I actually knew about the computer, because I went into a different practice. And I didn't realize that I had been enabled by my assistant, and that I really didn't know how to find stuff, how to do stuff. And I was like, oh, well, that can't be good, right? Yeah. And it was terrible. And so instead of going, oh, woe is me, I'm not 23 years old, I can't do this, I was like, it's only the computer, let's go find out what to do. So my mother, my blessed mother, who obviously is, 22 years older than I am, and we both actually enrolled in the local community college for the community member classes on how to use a computer. Yeah. And we went to the library classes. And for a while there, we learned everything we could. We took a bunch of classes and asked a bunch of questions because the people that were teaching the class were very, very nice. And you could kind of tailor it to what you needed to know. And yes, I mean, for those of you who are listening and are not real proficient at something, for heaven's sakes, don't just throw up your hands and say, I can't. The answer is, of course you can. You're of good intelligence. Go find somebody to teach it to you. Yeah, find an expert, I suppose. That's a good point. Yes, we found an expert. We actually took rather fabulous community classes. Well, it is true that we live in an urban area, but it was like, well, let's find out how to do this. Yes, and then we knew, and then we didn't need to take the classes anymore because we knew. Yes, because she wanted to know too. It was like, you're going to do that? I'd like to come with you. And I'm like, sure, let's make a day of it. Yeah, and we did, yes. Yes, we actually learned in a rather short time. We took classes back to back just because we wanted to know. And if you got stuck in some way, you could always bring your laptop, because in those days it was the laptop, and now we all use an iPad and like that, but still I use a laptop. And it is, in fact, this show is on a laptop. But, yeah, it was before the show. Yes, it was before this show. And like that, but not only will actually saying, I don't understand what I'm doing, and instead of going, oh, my God, I'll never understand it, or just hiring somebody to do it for you, something important like that, go take some classes. Yes, so this is true, too. You could take classes online. It's funny, actually. But we took classes in person. And so we could take classes online. And then I had the confidence to say, well, I think the organization, well, somebody actually set this up for me and said, you will do it. But I was like, well, yes, there's a radio show that you can do through the computer and it goes on the website and like that. Cool. I'm in. So here we are today and the rest is history. Yes. But yes, it's a good example of understanding what you don't understand. And that's really a good point. Yeah, you have to understand what you don't understand. And we're going to be talking about empathy and like that. But mainly, everybody has to come to an understanding of, I don't think I know that. I think I'm going to need some assistance. Yeah, it'll be fine, but I gotta get some help here. Nothing wrong with admitting that, for heaven's sakes. That's a sign of intelligence. It's a sign of intelligence to say, I don't know about this. I don't think I've got it. I need to work this out. Right? Yeah. And yeah. So you need to have an understanding, and not only of your preconceptions and your biases, because you have to think about that for yourself as well as for your participants and everybody else you're dealing with. And don't forget to think about it for the employer. Remember, on this show, we call whoever it is that had the brains to bring us in as leader the employer. It does not necessarily indicate an actual employment relationship where you get paid, right? Paid by, well, ultimately it's all people, but sometimes you're brought in by an organization, like a board, or, you know, or an actual organization. Sometimes you're brought in by an individual. But whoever it is that's taking an interest and brought you in as leader, and you probably are maybe not formally reporting to them, but you're keeping them in the loop, right? They're the employer. I don't care if it's not really an employment relationship. We're going to call those, that group, that person, that whoever, the employer. Got it? Got it. Yeah, and you have to understand that about them too. And sometimes people don't like to admit they don't know. They don't like to admit that they have a bias or a preconception, right? They don't like to admit that they're not sure how to do this. Yeah, because they don't want people to think they're ignorant, I think. Maybe. Muhammad and others are saying that it's a case of personal arrogance. Yes. Sometimes, you ever have this? Okay, I seem to be telling personal stories today, but you ever have where somebody, I have this all the time, people come up to me out of context, they're not where I originally met them, and they say, "Hi, Sue, oh, I'm so glad to see you," and they start chatting away, and they're really enthusiastic, and we're old friends, right? Yeah, and I can't remember who they are. I can remember, I'm listening to conversation, I can place how I know them, but I don't know them very well, you know what I mean? And a lot of times they were like clients or participants or experts, so something that was fairly high level, and we did at the time negotiate and react favorably to each other. I mean, we were friends-ish. But not the kind where we actually went out for coffee and stuff particularly. But, you know, we celebrate each success and like that. And they're real enthusiastic. Yeah, you've all done this. It's kind of too late to ask their name. Isn't that funny? Now, sometimes I get desperate, and you know me, I smile and I say, you know, I got to admit this. And I remember you, and I like you very much, and you're fabulous, but I can't actually pull up your name, and they laugh, because it's funny, right? But sometimes you go blank on the name. I know who they are, but I'm better with faces. I'm better with people than I am with recalling their actual name. It would be best if people wore name tags, right? Right? And yes, sometimes it's truly awful. I'm wearing a name tag because I'm the speaker or something, and they're not. So that's kind of unfair. In that instance, I think you can ask what their name is. I really do, because you could kind of work it in. But it's kind of tricky. People are saying what you do is you kind of call somebody else over and have them introduce themselves to the other person, and then you know who they are. That's an idea. I could see it in a social situation. Excuse me, took a sip of water. But, yeah, that's kind of tricky. Cool. But that's why people can't admit that they don't know something. Because everybody else seems to know it, right? And they're supposed to know it because they're the supervisor or something. And they don't want to admit that they don't know something. So they kind of hide it, right? Yeah, and at the time I didn't actually tell everybody that we were going to computer classes either. It was kind of nobody's business, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we sure got better fast. So you need, the other thing you need to do is, of course, think about your comfort zone, think about your biases and what you know. And let's bring in an expert when you need to. And it's kind of a listening and understanding of different opinions and different ideas that causes you to say, you know, we're going to need an expert. And that's what, of course, we did with the computer classes, right? We brought in an expert. Yes. No, do not do that. My computer had a message, speaking of computers. It wants to restart. It's kind of like, no, we're in the middle of a show. Yes. The other thing that has growth potential that you guys are talking about is what I'm going to call good faith. To really grow into good faith and past an agenda. Because sometimes people come into the process and they have an agenda. It's either their personal agenda because they have a preconceived notion or bias, or it's some sort of a business agenda. It might be an agenda handed to them by someone else, like an employer, right? Or an organization, right? Yeah. And so we need to have growth potential. We need to grow and say, well, this was our beginning agenda, but now we can see that this is what's going to work. This is what's a good idea. And sometimes what we started off with, not so much, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to act in good faith as growth despite a personal, professional agenda. We're going to think it through. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that this is a fair game for growth potential too, and that's obeying the civility rules. Some people have to be taught that. Some groups are naturally kind of civil to each other. They're in accord. And some need to think about it. They need instruction. They really do. The obeying the civility rules. We're going to talk about that too. And yes, I do like this one. How about growth as a team, as a group, as an entity, as a, we're all in this together, let's forge forward. Yes. And that will happen if the leader is good at group dynamics, good at keeping everything together. And we are, of course, yes. So let's talk about these things in more detail. Let's talk about thinking outside the box. Mm-hmm. Outside the box, which is kind of an Americanism, but it means we're going to think about a new way of doing something, right? Yeah. We see this a lot in technology nowadays. Yeah, that's a real good point. Margaret says that sometimes when you think, people think about outside the box and technology, they reinvent something that didn't need to be reinvented. Yeah. Sometimes that does happen. It's kind of like there was nothing wrong with the old system. Why are we doing it this way? Because it's cooler. Oh, all right. But it's, yeah, that's, see, Muhammad says that's generational. Maybe it is. Maybe that's an opinion of how, of what is done just because it's more attractive to do it that way, and not necessarily better. Yeah, see, that's the better part. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of water. Hang on. Yes. I see this a lot in business. Okay, for meetings and things, we use Skype a lot. Skype is not such a new thing, although they do indeed keep upgrading. But a lot of times people get excited, there's a better conferencing type system that they like better that they kind of use. Now, nobody doesn't know how to use Skype, which is one reason that we use it. And unless there's a reason not to use it, because something has better reception, for example, in a different country. Sometimes Zoom, for example, is better, or something else. There's some reason, an actual practical reason. Sometimes people just like what's newer, but it's not better. It's just newer. And so you have to think about whether you're outside the box needs to be, whether it's a good thing or not. And good thing is an opinion, right? Yeah. Yes, and sometimes outside the box is not new ideas. Sometimes it's resurrected ideas. Yeah. It's ideas that were tried before, maybe even, right? And maybe this person, this group was kind of thought it was a good idea then. But why didn't it work? Why wasn't it adopted? Why are we still talking about it, right, is the question. And sometimes the answer is as simple as because it wasn't the right time, that circumstances have changed. Sometimes outside circumstances change. They do. Yeah, the world becomes more amenable to something, for example. And you go, wow, this is a good idea now, and we're going to do it this way, right? And you think, well, yeah, this is now, oh, the law has changed, societal mores have changed. Yes, and it happens relatively frequently in the modern age because, of course, we have technology and the Internet. And people form groups and they get together and they promote different ideas. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's actually quite fabulous. Mm-hmm. So outside the box could be an idea from before that we're going to reconsider. Yes, the key is the team effort. Excuse me, I've got to take a sip of water. Goodness gracious, I seem to have a frog in my throat. Which leads us to our next topic. Because our next topic is if you're going to think outside the box, then you're pretty much thinking outside the comfort zone. And you need a reason that everyone understands and works towards to think outside the comfort zone. What's the comfort zone, you ask? Because some of you are. It's kind of, I suppose, it's somewhat of an Americanism. But if you think about it, your comfort zone and the comfort zone of others is how things have always been done. How things have always been done. Now we think about that oftentimes from a social standpoint, from kind of an ethnic standpoint. But this is not necessarily true. A lot of times organizations have a comfort zone. They have a way that things have always been done. And successful people in the organization understand how to play the comfort zone. They do, let's face it. And so you need to think about why it is we need to leave the comfort zone, the way things have always been done. Yes, thank you. And yes, mm-hmm. Yes, Soji says, and who's going to be brave enough to say so? That's the ticket. Who's going to be brave enough to say so? Because a lot of times the way to get along is to just ignore the fact that you think that things could be better, could be done differently, that it's now the modern world, and do whatever it is that comes easiest. Yes, thank you, the path of least resistance. But we really want to get something done. We want to have a workable solution to something, and the time has come, right? You have to be kind of brave to say, I think we should think outside the box. We should think outside our comfort zone. We should really look around and see how others are doing it, for example. Yes, people are asking what kind of reasons work? What kind of reasons does thinking outside the box and kind of modifying the comfort zone? I like to say modify because if you're actually going to leave the comfort zone, that's really scary. Ooh, yeah. But if you're going to modify it and you're going to be able to keep it, right? Yeah. And we're just going to do it, we're going to just change it a little as we go along and then change it maybe a little bit more as we see that it's working. See, sometimes it's a gradual process and not just a pull out the hairs and run type thing. But if you're going to go outside the comfort zone, you have to have a reason. Yes, thank you. The most usual reason is economic. We're not doing very well. Or we could do better if we were more competitive, for example, in the market, right? More aware of what was going on, more changes, right? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's kind of gradual. The comfort zone, everybody understands how things work, and then things don't work all that well for a while, but everybody still understands that this is how it works. And then modification and change kind of creep in. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having things kind of go gradually, right? And not just cold turkey, as they say, where you just quit and put something else in place. Well, let's talk about that. Let's bring everybody on board by allowing them to know that they haven't really been in some way abandoned, that we're not just going for the new for the sake of the new, right? Yeah, you're going to need the team. You're going to need everybody to what they call buy in, right? You're going to need everybody to buy in that this is a good idea. Well, yeah. And maybe, and besides, if you can discuss this and you go forward, sometimes they have ideas. You go, yeah, you know, that's a better modification. Because maybe somebody got excited, let's get rid of the whole thing. But the answer is, well, no. We've got some parts that just need to be tweaked, right? Yeah. How we've always been done, well, maybe we could show people the new technology, for example, right? Yeah. Maybe the new laws, the new tax laws, kind of. In the United States, we have lots of tax laws. Probably wherever you are, too, because this is a global show. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, thank you. George and others are saying that leaving the comfort zone is the reason why Recipe for Peace Now often talks about the anonymous participants. Yes. The anonymous participants. We talk about that when we talk about understanding, right? When we talk about listening and understanding. Sometimes people who are in your group, are really working on it overtly, sometimes people are kind of reporting back or have the desire to please someone who is not in the room and is what we call the invisible participant. Are they making actual reports? Well, it might not be that formal. But they are indeed have participants who are influencing them. And we would like to hear from them. I would. I'd like to know their opinion, these invisible participants, the anonymous ones, right? I would like to know what they think, who they think we should talk to, right? Who would be a good expert? What their opinion is, because oftentimes they're in the trenches. They're actually doing it. How will this impact you? What should we do? These are all really good questions, right? Yeah. And I like to know the impact is the question. And so the invisible participants usually want to remain anonymous, but maybe you could ask your participant to ask permission to contact them or be contacted, because I want to know. They have important information, and usually they want the change to occur. People are asking how come they need to be anonymous, And by the way, if you breach the confidence and tell who they are, it will ruin your reputation. No one will ever trust you again. Do not do that. Do not find out who somebody is and then tell. No, that's a real bad idea. But the invisible participants want to be anonymous usually because they have something of value to impart. Their opinion is extremely valuable, but they're usually employed in the present-day comfort zone, right? They could lose their job if somebody knew that they were helping us, for example. Or they're not divulging proprietary secrets or something, because we don't allow that. But they don't want to be known that they're kind of a revolutionary. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to be the front person for that. It could be economically a bad idea, for example. You could get fired, right? Yeah. So you want to tell the group something that you know that they need to do that would impact the decision, right? Something legal, of course, for heaven's sakes. But it is, you don't want anybody to know that you told them is the key to it. It's not a secret exactly, but it's something practical that we have to consider. And you know how, if you've been on this program for more than two times, you know what I feel about the law of unintended consequences, that we didn't know that this is what would happen. No, we want to know. We want people to tell us that this will be the consequence, or at least potentially, of this act. And you go, ooh, really? Let's see what we can do about that. Let's see what should be done. Let's consider it. Let's call in an expert and find out. Right? Yeah. So and not you must keep the confidence, but it's wonderful because it helps you leave the comfort zone. It gives you a reason to leave the comfort zone, right? Because they're in the comfort zone. And they tell you, well, this part of it is not really responsive, for example. Or this part of it is outdated, right? And you go, whoa, now we know something. Yeah. So we need to keep the anonymity and tell the information so we could do something. Yes, this is true too. Folks are saying that sometimes they're what they tell you, the anonymous participant, is just an opinion. Yeah, of course it is, and you need to consider all sides and call in some real third-party experts to really take a look at this, to really decide if that's what's going to happen, prevent unintended consequences. Let's talk about preconceptions and understanding them. We all have them. We all have an idea of what's going to happen. We all have an idea of how things are going to go, right? And our preconceptions need to be acknowledged. Maybe not even publicly, but we have to be aware of them. And you have to understand that the people you're dealing with have preconceptions too. Yes, we are talking about things like bias and ideas about other types of people and whether or not you can deal with them successfully. Yeah, that kind of stuff. So we need to think about our own because we don't want to taint the negotiation. And we need to think about the words and the what people are saying and how they're saying it and like that to understand if we've got some sort of bias in the room, we have to talk it out. We have to bring it to the open. Pardon me, I've got to take another sip of water. Goodness, I seem to be losing my voice slightly. Sorry about that. But we have to think about it. And, of course, while we are thinking about ourselves, we must also think about all the people, all the entities that are being impacted, that are having a say. The employer, do they have some sort of biases, some sort of agenda, right? Mm-hmm. How about our other participants? How about the opposition? What kind of a preconception are they working from? Maybe we can reach out to them, and we are not as far away as we think. Maybe we want basically the same thing, but we have a different approach, right? Yeah. You see that a lot in kind of enforcement, that you have the idea of the same ultimate goal. We're all going to follow the rules, essentially speaking. But the how to do it is the thing that we're not real in step with, right? Yeah. Because we have an agenda, we have an idea of what should be done, and sometimes the American one does not coincide with what other people think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we need a reason to leave our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And you need a reputation of keeping confidences, right? Yeah. So, and preconceptions, right? Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do with our preconceptions? Well, let's listen. Let's understand, right? Let's do listening and understanding. Listening and understanding to ourselves, but to others also. Yeah, even the media sometimes has preconceptions, that frequently do. You ever notice that some media is more... Well, we have a lot of media in the United States, and you do too, of course, because the Internet exists. And some media is more sympathetic to one side or the other, right? Yeah. And some of it's kind of got an agenda to sway public opinion is usually the agenda, to make us think that things are not, right? Mm-hmm. You have to muck all of this out. Mm-hmm. Use of competing experts is kind of nice because you have to really think about what you're looking at, right? Mm-hmm. And for understanding, we're going to need some empathy, aren't we? Yeah, we're going to need some empathy. And remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. Understanding, not necessarily agreement. Yeah, understanding, not necessarily agreement. What that means is we're going to ask the 5W questions so that we know stuff, so that we can understand what's going on. And those questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why? Yeah. Because when we find out, and do we ask them all at once? Not necessarily. I mean, if it flows, you can. Do we ask them in front of everybody? Also, that's a judgment call for the leader. Because that might be embarrassing, or it might elicit not exactly an untrue response, but a guarded response, the answer would be. Right? Because, well, we already discussed that people don't look tonight to look like they don't know. Or people have an agenda. Or people are, well, they don't want to listen, right? So we want to elicit the answers to these questions in kind of a natural manner. Mm-hmm. And in front of everybody if that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes during the break, during the food, during the potluck, a lot of times I actually go around and I listen to people and I ask them questions kind of privately, which is one of the reasons that we have frequent breaks, so that I can see where that's coming from, right? Who, what, where, when, and why, right? Yeah. Is the person mimicking something, some sort of a person that they respect, some person that kind of is in control? Is it something that they know from experience, this preconception, this idea that we're going to have empathy for, and he's going to have to change his mind, right? Is it experience or is it taught? Because sometimes what you think is something that someone taught you, maybe even long ago, and you when you were a child, for example, or formative in some way, and what you think, excuse me, take a sip of water. Pardon me. And what you think is a fact. We have preconceptions like that, don't we? Let's think about some of them, right? Are they really facts, or they're kind of a foundational basis on which we order our lives, right? Some of them are, of course, harmless. I have a preconception, because I'm an American, that the left side faucet on a sink is hot water, even though it doesn't have any kind of indication on it. Because in the United States, that's hot, and you turn the faucet towards that side if you want hot water. This is not actually true every place. It's kind of a surprise. You're like, ooh, wait a minute. And so you have certain foundational preconceptions that are just habit, that are something that you think is a fact. Habits become kind of internalized facts. But you have to think about whether or not that's what that is and whether or not you're dealing with people of a different internalized fact. And it's all an opinion. It's all learned, right? Yeah. And, yes, so you're going to have some empathy. Who, what, where, when, and why. And then you'll find out about these things. And then we can all listen. And we can all understand. And we can all head towards middle ground, because that's what negotiation is. And that's what compromise is, which gives us a workable outcome. Because remember, on this show and in life, the sentence agreement in principle is truly icky. Yes, I hate it when people do that. Agreement in principle. Politicians do that. We've agreed in principle. And they say it like, whoa, we really got somewhere. No, you did not. Because agreement in principle means that you haven't agreed to a working outcome. You haven't agreed to anything. You've agreed to say agreement in principle. No. We want to have a negotiated, workable, successful outcome. We want to be able to do something and not just agree in principle, right? Now, when you're dealing with an entrenched comfort zone, an agreement to think outside of it, which is kind of agreement in principle in its way, might be the first step. But wow, it's not the last step. Mm-mm, we're going to actually do something. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of times we do bring in experts. Good point. I think it's good to have competing experts so we don't have the law of unintended consequences. We ask them to justify themselves and to find out if there's different sides, different ideas. If in good faith, which is our next topic, in good faith, people who are experts disagree on what should be done. Well, that's kind of interesting, eh? Yeah. In good faith, let's see what needs to be done and whether or not we can agree on it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a growth into good faith, mm-hmm. A growth of potential to really act in good faith towards each other and towards whoever it is that's impacted, right? Mm-hmm. And that means that we are going to think about our agendas. Sometimes the employer has an agenda. I like to get that straight up front. I want to know if, remember, it's a generic term, if the employer has an agenda they expect me to validate. I want to know that because I might not be the right person for this if that's all we're doing. If we are just validating an agenda, validating a preconceived notion so they could say, well, Sue says that the group that Sue led, that's what they concluded. Maybe. Now maybe that is what we're going to conclude. But not because it's an agenda. We're going to do it because it's right, because it's the thing that needs to be done, right? Yeah. We're not just going to do stuff because it's just stuff that needs to be done. No. We're going to have an actual reason and an actual practicality and an actual working agenda, a working plan, which needs to be flexible, for how this is going to occur, how our successful outcome is going to occur. So we have to grow as a team, don't we, in good faith? Yeah. A lot of times I see groups where they are kind of unwilling participants. They are unwilling in the sense that they haven't chosen to be a part of the group. It goes with whatever kind of position they are in an organization. It could call it employment, but sometimes they're volunteers or something. But it is because they are of a certain usual supervisory capacity, they've got to participate, right? Or because they are of a certain impacted level. Somebody with usually supervisory, but I like to see the people going to be impacted by it too, and they're forced to participate. See, so they're kind of unwilling to begin with, especially, and I do disapprove of this, especially if it's on their own time. I like to have the employer pay for the time that people spend on this because it makes us all happier, right? Yeah. And I do deal with big organizations, so usually it's not a problem. And not just say, you will volunteer to be on this committee. Hopefully not at night on my time, right? Yeah. So we're going to grow as a team, and we're really, what started out as kind of like, oh, geez, not another committee, is going to morph into, wow, we're really getting someplace, and this is going to be fine. We are going to get this done, right? Growth in good faith. We have growth potential. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are asking about the civility rules. Sometimes you've got, there will be, because I always say to enforce the civility rules immediately, consistently, and fairly. And for a while there, you're going to think, if you've got someone who's truly intent on breaching the civility rules, you're going to do a lot of repetition, like for, I don't know, dog training or something. But I don't just do that, and you shouldn't either. But with civility rules, I'm sorry, we have new people. Hello, how is everyone? The civility rules, that they're very basic, and they're the only rules the Recipe for Peace now actually has. They're very basic. The civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other, right? Yeah. No, we will not be. And then you take it from there. Because we want to have a respectful, convivial atmosphere that people want to work in so that we can grow together as a team. Sometimes you've got someone who is intent on breaking the civility rules, oftentimes because they have a personal agenda. Or they have secretly been given an agenda by somebody. It's not really personal, but they've got an agenda, and the agenda is, I want to either hijack this group and make them do what I say, or I want the group to fail. You can choose which agenda you see more frequently, right? Yeah. And that means that you can say that is uncivil and enforce, but just the words, that's nice, but you must have the answer to this question, whether it is said out loud just like this or it is implied. What you gonna do about it? Right? Yeah. I want to be uncivil. There is a reason. Sometimes people are just obnoxious. I've seen that too. Yes, we're all voting for that. And they and but I see a lot of agenda. I usually deal with business people on a certain business level. Sometimes I suppose I do see people who are kind of naturally bombastic. They just like to fight. But it is more usual to see someone with an agenda. But either way, the outcome is the same. And the question is, what you gonna do about it? What you gonna do about it? And you must have an answer that's really got some teeth. And the answer that has some teeth comes from the employer or whoever it is that this person who said asked that question, not necessarily in those words, but basically, the answer must come from somebody who can do something to them, which is usually the employer, right? Now, if there's an actual employer, there can be a monetary repercussion. Everybody of a certain level must be here. Well, how'd you like to not be of that level? See, that's a good thing. Yeah, people are saying a fine, as in money. It kind of depends on the group. If the fine is like a swear jar and there's peer pressure, it can be a small amount because you've got peer pressure. If it is not, and it is truly a hijack attempt and like that, if you're going to go for a fine, it has to be a noticeable amount, a goodly amount of money, and taken directly out of their paycheck by the employer on your word. Yeah. It needs to get people's attention is what I'm telling you, because bad behavior is catchy, and you don't want it to derail the entire process because we are growing and we are working as a team. Yes, that's our growth potential, to be a really successful team and get a workable outcome. Okay, I have actually left a few minutes for the recipe, because we haven't been doing them. And you guys are like, what happened to it? And pasta with clams has been on the list for like a long time. And so it's an adventure recipe. Why is it an adventure recipe? Because sometimes people don't eat seafood. They're definitely allergic, for God's sake. So before we have food, we're going to take a survey. And we're going to ask if anybody is allergic to anything, can't eat something because of some sort of prohibition, like a religious one, or simply doesn't eat something. We don't want someone to have a bad time. It's a convivial atmosphere, right? Right. And so we're going to take a survey, and we're going to find out if we have somebody who can't eat something, and we won't serve it. We're not going to have it in the room. And then we ask people when they bring something to bring a list of what's in it so that I can run my eye down the list and see if I can eat this, because sometimes people get surprised, right? Right. Yeah, that's true, too. People are saying sometimes people don't respond to the survey. I get kind of cranky if you don't tell me. I do. And then you show up and you tell me you're allergic to clams. Hey, no, we're going to find out first. So let's do the pasta with clams. We've cleared it, right? We've had the survey, and we've cleared it. So we're going to have a nice big onion. I like the sweet kind. They're called Vidalias out here, but I don't like something too bitter, too spicy. That's just me. We're going to have 4 garlic cloves, finely chopped. I like a lot of garlic. If you don't like a lot of garlic, put in less. We're going to have a large can of tomatoes that we're going to drain. If you want, you can use regular tomatoes, the kind that you chop. I find that the canned ones are more convenient because it's hard to get ripe and like that, but that's just me. So one of those big cans, drain it real thoroughly. We're going to have about 3 cups of stock. If you've got such a thing, since we've already established that this is pasta with clams, you can use fish stock. If not, you can use vegetable, which is nice. Chicken, maybe. Yeah, it'll be okay. Don't use beef because it makes it dark. And that's really the truth. Fish stock's a little hard to come by. Vegetable is easier. Chicken's real easy, so you guys can use that. 3 cups? Mm-hmm. Actually, I'd put in a little less and then watch it for the amount of liquid. Let's have about 4 pounds of clams that we're going to clean. You all know how to clean it and beard it and like that. If they're open, throw them out. Let's use about a half cup of white wine. This is our adventure recipe, right? And maybe a little bit more than half a cup. Let's put a cup of white wine in there. Let's juice about a quarter of a lemon. And, of course, we need some cooked pasta. Now, I like I like about a pound of cooked, a lot of cooked pasta. I usually use about a pound because we like a lot of pasta. It's delicious, and it soaks up the liquid. So we're going to cook it al dente. We're going to strain it, of course, and set it aside. Use some sort of pasta that's not messy, because if you use the stringy spaghetti stuff that's more traditional with this, you're going to have people use tongs to get it to their plate. This is already a messy act. I like something that uses a spoon and the solid pieces. I kind of prefer like a rigatoni type thing. It's pretty. It's fine. It's delicious. And it's not messy. You don't need tongs and to swirl it on your plate and try to get it in your mouth. We're going to use a nice big fennel bowl. We're going to wash it real good. Remember, those suckers really have dirt in them. We're going to wash it real good and slice it up real thin, like with a mandolin, right? And that's it. We're going to heat some oil in a nice big casserole because we're going to put all of this stuff in there. We're going to take that nice onion and give it a good cook in the oil. We're going to add the garlic until everything smells good and is nicely kind of translucent, right? We're going to add the tomatoes. Drained them, right? We're going to look at our clams, and we're going to make sure that none of them are cracked. And we're going to add them to the pan as they open, right? And in batches, right? And as they open, we're going to take them out of the shell. You can use shelled clams, too. That's more convenient. They come in, around here, they come in a package with shells, without any shells. And they're usually dated, so they're fresh. We're going to add so we've taken them out because we're going to add the white wine to the sauce, plus the fish stock, plus the lemon juice, and the pasta, and the sliced fennel. And we're going to cover it and simmer it for about 10 minutes because really everything is already cooked, right? Give it a little stir to make sure the pasta is doing all right. We're going to add the clams because now everything is incorporated and delicious. Right? Yeah, we cooked the pasta really quite al dente because we don't want to have to recook it and make it mushy. Maybe 10 minutes over a low heat might be too much time. You got to look at your pasta. I'm using thick pieces, so I think it's okay. Everything is in there. It's delicious. We're going to let it maybe stand covered for a few minutes before serving it because we're going to put the clams in at the last moment and we want them to warm through, but not really boil or cook because they're already cooked, right? And we want to absorb the liquid into the pasta. Give it a nice big stir. Ha! We've got it. Delicious! Remember, it is the adventure recipe because it does have seafood. And I like to actually reinforce the idea that there's clams. I actually put some clam shells on it as an ornament just so that everybody goes, oh, there's clams in there. And you're like, yes, there's clams in there. And then they say, I'm allergic to clams. And I'm like, didn't you answer the survey? Yeah. So they're like, really? People. And so you want to make sure that everybody understands that just in case anyone is allergic. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.